Thanks for downloading the Overdrive podcast. If you're on Instagram, make sure you follow us at TSN 1050. If you're not, sign up and follow us, even if it's the only account that you follow. Because if you're a big fan of the show, you've got to know what's going on behind the scenes. On Instagram, at TSN 1050.
It's time for Toronto's top line.
Ted Potter Jr., my guy.
All rolls those stars into Pebble on Beach. The back nine, and Teddy Potts just wheels around there like a grit grinder, bunting it around Pebble Beach.
I love Ted Potter Jr.
This is Overdrive on TSN 1050, the official voice of the Leafs.
Do you want to get right into your breaking news story, or do you want to get to the Leaf game?
I can't avoid talking about this. Like, it has been a huge story the past couple of days, that Toronto firefighter who was down in Lake Placid skiing, and he disappeared on the hill, and everyone obviously thought the worst, like he was gone. Like, there wasn't an avalanche or anything, but Lake Placid, that's a big mountain. It's a big hill, so you end up out of bounds, or you go down the wrong path, and it's been a couple of days, and people are freaking out. It turns out this guy threw, like, ninja dust up into the air, and he was in California. They found him in California. Like, what happened? I need to connect the dots here, because he was in Lake Placid with friends, family, coworkers. Like, his firehouse up here in Toronto were sending guys down to Lake Placid to look for him.
He is running from something or someone that he is not a fan of.
I need an explanation.
Dude, he's, what do they call it, on the lam, on the run?
On the run, clearly. But imagine that. Nah, honey, I'm going to take one more run. I'll meet you at the bottom. Guy ends up in California.
What did he do? Look back and then go, I'm going off track? Get I to need the to, bottom, flip his skis off and get in his truck?
I need to find this out. I need
I
to find
know
that out.
What the hell he's up to as well.
Because you're right. I mean, did they track his car down? Did he get to the airport on foot? Did he hitchhike all the way to California?
Like, do you get you get in trouble for that, don't you? Like, is he under... Like, what do you get in trouble for? You, like, faking a disappearance? Or?
Well, I don't know. I mean, they haven't concluded exactly what happened here, but... Like, New York State Police issued this statement. The circumstances regarding this case are under investigation, and further details will be released at a later time. I guess he was the one who turned himself in. He was in Sacramento, I think. I'm just reading the story. It's just breaking this afternoon. And I guess finally he went to the authorities in California and was like, yeah, there's a bunch of people looking for me in Lake Placid. I'm from Toronto. I guess I need to let people know I'm okay. But this is weird, man. This is a really strange story.
Well, shame on that guy. Unless he's got things going on that nobody knows about for putting people through that. Like, has this guy got kids and a wife? And
I think he's got the whole shooting match, yeah. He's 49. He's a firefighter from Toronto. It's been a huge, huge story for like 3 or 4 days. Last Thursday, I think he disappeared. And now he's in Sacramento, California.
Well, he's
I just need to know how he got there. I have to find out how he got there.
Yeah, like, how did it all go down? Did he go to Lake Placid by himself skiing?
No, he was down there with family, friends.
I'll give him props on that one. He shouldn't get in trouble.
What a disappearing act. Like, if he just wanted, like, a 4 or 5 days away by himself, couldn't you just talk yourself into that? Couldn't you explain that I got to get to California? I don't know, man. I don't even know where to take the story. I should not have read it right before we came on the air, because I can't get my head around it. And I'm glad you allowed me to bring it up right off the start of the show, because this will unravel.
Oh, yeah.
There will be a second investigation.
He's a bad boy. He is up to no good. And I want to know before this show's over what he's up to. Are you reading more?
I can't stop reading. Yeah, I'm reading more. I guess he's, yeah, in the care of police in Sacramento. The Toronto Fire Services are thanking everyone for participating in the search. Like, they sent down a lot of people. People have been searching Lake Placid for 4 or 5 days.
Well, we got to be careful here, because this guy might have had something wrong with him.
Who knows? That's what I'm wondering. I don't know, man. Anyway, we'll keep you up to date on that. because this is a story I need live updates on. How you go down a ski hill and then just disappear and end up in Sacramento, California 5 days later. That's a routine I need to find out more about. So how about your Toronto Maple Leafs? What a win last night.
You know what? They talk about it being a statement game, a measuring stick game. The one thing about that game is, and I don't think Tampa brought their best game. I don't think Vasilevsky was probably at his best. Didn't really notice Stamkos that much. But I think if anything the Maple Leafs can take away from that is just the idea of saying Tampa doesn't scare the hell out of me. Because if you lose that game 7-0, you were like, I don't even want to play these guys in the playoffs. We might have to, but it'll be ugly. But I think that's the one takeaway you can take from it. They don't scare the hell out of me.
This may be overreaction Tuesday. It kind of feels like that first Monday after week one of the NFL where
I don't think what
calls.
I just said is overreacting.
No, but what I'm about to say is something that I haven't said over the past 2 months.
Is this the noodles is the way comment?
No. I think I'd rather they play Tampa than Boston. I just don't think Tampa, to your point, physically scares you the way Boston can. They play a similar style. They're a high-flying skill team. It'll be based on who supplies the best goaltending last night.
Let me just back up a sec. Anderson. Who in Boston physically scares you beside Chara?
Well, Chara, Ryan McQuaid scares me a little bit. Bergeron, they don't like Tampa doesn't have a center that can control the play the way Bergeron can. David Backes, they got some big boys. They got some guys that can lean on you. And Tampa doesn't. Like, they're not like they were with Horton and Lucic, and, you know, they're not to that extent like the big bad Bruins, but the Bruins can control the play with their physicality. And, like, a guy like Mitch Marner, just Chara being on the ice with him may scare him off a little bit.
Scared me off.
It should. And Hedman's a big boy, and he can scare you in different ways, but not overly physical. He can throw his body around, but not overly physical. But Tampa, their building doesn't scare me the way Boston's building does. And that's just a mental edge. That's an intangible. But you look at Tampa, and they're loaded. They're a really good team. They're a really good team. And if the Leafs played Tampa, Tampa would be favored. But just the way they both play the game, the style, I think it's more conducive to the Leafs feeling more comfortable playing Tampa over Boston.
It definitely would not be that grinding series. And we're going to see what happens here coming down the stretch, because I think I said it last night. Both teams love their goaltending. Both teams love their offense, the way they can score. But which D-Core can lock it down? Which D-Core can get out there? Because if you looked at Tampa's D-Core last night, they weren't so crap hot either.
That top pairing is a great pairing. Hedman and Stroman are really, really good.
Yeah, but other than that, the Leafs cut the ice in half for a large portion of that game, and it was in the Tampa zone. Pressure on the D, get the puck back. Pressure on the D, get the puck back. And it was time after time. And that's why they want to upgrade that position. And I'm pretty sure they're going to be all in to do it.
Tampa? Yeah, they probably have to be. But I don't think Mike Green does it for them. Like, that's the thing. Who's out there that they're going to acquire? Maybe Ryan McDonough, if they're willing to pay a price?
He could.
McDonough would help them.
That's a serious upgrade.
Yeah, he's a good player. Really good player.
That guy's a 25-minute-a-night D-man.
Yeah. You have him on an opposite pairing of Hedman, you got a much better thing going for you. But Tampa's a really good team, really talented team, but the Leafs are a really good, talented team, too, with question marks on the back end. And that's not going to change between now and the deadline. I love everyone with their own take on what the Leafs are going to do or how they think it's going to play out. Can we all concede that we have no clue what Lou Lamoriello is going to do between now and the trade deadline? Like, nobody has a clue what he's going to do. We can all have a take on how we feel they should approach it. We all have an opinion, and we all do, and we'll give our opinions over the next 2 weeks, and we'll do that throughout the afternoon on ideally what we'd like to see happen. But anybody who thinks they know what Lou's going to do is lying. You have no idea what he's going to do. Nobody has a clue what Lou Lamoriello is going to do. He could trade for Ryan McDonagh. He could. I don't think it's going to happen, but I can't say definitively that thought hasn't crossed his mind. McDonough's got another year left on his deal. I think it's more likely that if the Leafs make a deal, it's someone with term. It's a Nick Jarmerson with This Year and Next. It's a Ryan McDonough This Year and Next. And then you're willing to pay a little bit more, but you've got this year and next year with that player, and all of a sudden your window is two playoff runs. And maybe he likes it here, and you extend him, and it's more than just a year and a half. Because realistically, we all know this, they're not going to trade any of their big core pieces. We're talking either prospects, picks, or guys who are on the exterior of the core.
Yeah, and if anybody thinks why Mike Babcock comes out and makes a comment, like, we're just trying to show Lou what he can... He really believes that he can coach a team in matchups and get to a playoffs. Look what he did with that Detroit team 2 or 3 years ago. Well, it was longer than that. It was probably 5 years ago now because he's been here for three. That team that made the playoffs with no Datsyuk and no Zetterberg, and he won all those games coming down the stretch with that group of players. He's probably thinking, you load up on this one, and I can do some damage. You know, that's exactly what he's thinking.
Well, why would you not be confident?
No kidding.
Why would you not be confident? Like, of course there's no guarantees. But there's no guarantees for Tampa or Boston.
There's no guarantees in anything in pro sports.
No.
In a year where it seems like it could be anybody's game, obviously there's six teams that are probably one of them is going to win the cup. But throw your name in the hat.
Mm-hmm. Like in the East, again, the Leafs are in the more difficult spot than I think the teams on the other side of the conference because of who they're going to have to go through. Tampa and or Boston. And then Tampa and or Boston. But those teams as of now... Vegas would have them favored, deservedly so, but not by like a country mile. Like if the Leafs end up playing Boston, let's not forget, back in 2013, the Leafs were up 4-1 in Game 7 and lost in overtime. That was a much, much inferior Leaf team, and I would say that Bruins team was probably better than the one we see today.
Well, the Toronto Maple Leafs owned the Boston Bruins last year. This is a different team. They're just...
The Bruins are on the heater of all heaters, though, right now.
Yes, they
like,
are.
It's impossible to truly get a read on what they're going to be in a month and a half.
Yeah.
But the Leafs just continue to grow and grow and grow. Like, they've won 8 of 9. They're playing better now than they have all year. All of a sudden, they are a two-line team that causes havoc on the opponents. Because the Matthews and the Kadri line, I thought, were outstanding again last night. That's not going to happen every night.
And then JVR chips in with the game winner.
Exactly. Like, that's depth. That Kapanen played well last night.
Yeah.
You know, that's what they've got. You were calling for it all year. Load up on a couple of lines. That's what they've got. Like, the Matthews and Kadri line, this is 7-8 games in a row. They have been borderline dominant, with the exception of a game here or there. But when you get a situation like last night, you're great.
Those guys together.
Yeah.
It's outstanding.
The only loss is at Boston.
Yeah.
So... it's an exciting time to be a Leaf fan. Yeah, there's some trepidation because you understand you're going to play a good team in the first round and the second round. Guess what? It won't be easy in the conference final either. The way Pittsburgh's going right now, it feels like Pittsburgh's probably the favorite. Again, in the East, they're real close. But crazier things have happened, and it's not always about the other team. I know it feels that way, and I think that's what aggravates a lot of Leaf fans. It aggravates me. You know, I knew I was going to hear it today. Okay, give me the excuse as to why the Leafs should not have won. Ah, Vasilevsky didn't play that great. Stamkos and Kucherov were relatively quiet. It's never why the Leafs won or deserved to win. It's always, well, you know, Nashville, they started slow. Okay, well, who won the game?
I agree.
You know, well, Vasilevsky wasn't. Okay. So that's the way the sport works.
Exactly.
They played, and the Leafs were the better team, and they won.
I agree.
There's always a reason why the Leafs should not have won or why you should feel... as if the Leafs aren't as good as the record suggests.
Well, I'm actually happy that Austin Matthews is coming out and saying things like, we're done with the learning lessons, we're ready to move.
As they should be. And that doesn't mean you get crazy
and
trade
still
five first-round picks or the expectations are through the roof. Like, let me ask you this. How deep into the playoffs would they have to go? How many rounds would they have to win for you to say, wow, I'm surprised they got this far?
I think if they added some depth on D, like quality defensemen, nothing would surprise me.
Even a cup win would not even surprise you.
I would be surprised, but I wouldn't be shocked. I think there's a difference, right?
Mm-hmm. I think also when you think about it, who they're going to play, how can you sit there and say, nah, I wouldn't be surprised if they beat Boston, that I wouldn't be surprised if they beat Tampa, but I would be surprised if they beat
the way they're the playing next teams right now, play. It shouldn't surprise anybody.
No. If you're a team that is ranked somewhere between 6 and 10 in the league, which is where they are, that is not shot. It's not Cinderella.
That's right.
You're not a Cinderella team.
Yeah.
Cinderella is second wild card, backdooring in and going on a run.
And that's usually what the league's all about, the 5 or 6 that are like reviewed or viewed as the best teams in the league. And then there's a couple that chisel on the outside that are like, maybe they can get into that group, and the rest don't have a shot. Yeah. Like, literally no shot.
No. No, you can look at the teams that don't have a shot. You know, Philly's playing really well right now. I don't see Philly as a cup contending team.
I would be shocked if they won any round.
Jersey, not happening. I don't even know if Jersey's going to hold on for a playoff spot.
Well, they're starting to slide a little.
And Corey Schneider being injured. And, you know, Calgary, I can't see it. But Calgary's the kind of team with that kind of defense, if Mike Smith is healthy and playing okay. But the Leafs are better than Calgary, in my opinion. So, I don't know. It was a fun game to watch last night. I thought the Matthews and Nylander line were outstanding, and the Marner line was quality. Probably Dermott's worst game. He got exposed a little bit, but I don't think that's a coincidence that he was playing with Pollock. I thought Pollock was running around and put him in a difficult position. But it was a fun game, and they got Columbus in here tomorrow night.
They can cap off an unbelievable homestand, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, they've won 8 of 9, and they're still chasing Boston and Tampa. And that's how good the top of this division is.
And they both have games in hand, I believe.
Yeah, they do. Boston's got 4 in hand. The Leafs have won 8 of 9, and Boston's still 3 up with 4 games in hand. That's how good Boston's been.
Yeah.
Leafs are 6 back of Tampa, and Tampa's got 2 games in hand. That's how good Tampa's been all year. I didn't think Stamkos was visible at all last night either. That's 2 games in a row that the Leafs have played them, and Stamkos has really been a non-factor.
Yeah, I didn't notice him hardly at all. Little spurts of speed here and there, but it wasn't a typical night for him, and he usually dominates at that.
In Toronto, yeah. He generally does.
Him and Tavares usually own the Leafs in Toronto.
Mm-hmm. Kevin Pelton, ESPN NBA insider, will join us in about 15 minutes. How about Steve Kerr last night? The Warriors at home against Phoenix, and they won by like 35. In the fourth
129
quarter,
129 to
83 or something like that. And in the fourth quarter, you just stopped coaching, and you let the players coach themselves.
I love everything about Steve Kerr, but he missed the mark on that one.
You don't like that move?
You're embarrassing your opposition. Just act like you're coaching, but don't coach. How much coaching needs to happen when you're up by that much anyway? Like, that you're embarrassing. Like, you don't have to do that to another team that you're killing.
So you think he was disrespecting Jay Triano and the coaching fraternity by doing that?
I think he's just disrespecting the opposition. He can throw everybody in that.
I would say Phoenix putting the players on the floor that they put on the floor is disrespecting themselves. They're one of the worst teams in the league. They're brutal. I like it. I thought it was different. I thought it was unique. I think Steve Kerr realizes he won a free hand here. He took over a situation in Golden State where they're on the verge of going on one of the great runs in pro sports history.
It was just the perfect storm.
It was perfect. He had never coached before.
I remember when he was calling games.
Yes, he was a color analyst.
And they were talking about him. I'm thinking, what the hell does this guy know about coaching? Like, why is he such a prime target? And by all things, like, he's brilliant. He's a smart guy.
He's
the perfect guy for the perfect team.
Yes. And remember, the Knicks were in on him. Like, Phil Jackson had just been hired, and they were going to offer him more money. And he said, no, thanks. I'll go to Golden State. Now we know why. But I think it's refreshing to see his approach. It's refreshing to see how he handles greatness. It's the polar opposite of Belichick. Polar opposite. But what it does is it teaches us there are more ways to win than just one way. You don't have to be crusty and bitter all the time and on top of things and almost like a dictator. Steve Kerr clearly allows his players to flourish.
Oh, he's been mic'd up on a few conversations with Steph. And he's just talking like, you know, hey, I know you don't feel like you're shooting good, but everything you're doing out there is a positive. You hear that?
Yeah.
It's just, he's different.
But that's what he has to do, right? Like, he understands there are a lot of coaches that could win titles with that team. They're that talented. They're that good. But for him to be successful as a coach, He's got to find ways to motivate. He's got to find ways to keep them on the right path. He's got to find ways to keep egos in check. He's got to find ways for the players to continue to want him around because he knows he's not going to win that battle. Steph Curry turns on him, he's done. So there's an element of greatness to his tactics where I think at times maybe we disparage a coach like that because we're like, anyone could win that. It's like Babcock at the Olympics. Those Canadian teams in 2010 and 2014 are two of the great teams ever put together. But he managed to get them on the same page and keep everyone in check and everyone aligned with what they're supposed to do. And I think Steve Kerr has proven that he can do that. I think that makes him a great coach. But this is interesting. It's different. It's a different tactic. It's about keeping his team engaged. And he has to because he's dealing with a totally unique scenario than anyone else in pro sports. They've been to three NBA finals. They won 73 games in the regular season a couple of years ago. They know they're going back and winning again this year. You've got to mix it up every once in a while. Like, I knew that people would find it disrespectful to Jay Triano, to the Suns, to other coaches, but I think what Kerr is proving here is that he doesn't
Ryan,
care.
He's not proving anything in that big of a win.
But you can't do it if it's close. If it's close,
I just don't think
you can't allow your players to goof around.
I don't like it at all.
The optics? As a player on the other team, you would be disrespectful?
Goofing around on the bench. It's just don't do it. I didn't have any time for that. Do that in a practice if you want, a scrimmage. Let somebody coach a scrimmage. You don't have to do it in a game and embarrass your opponent. I was disappointed in that.
You were disappointed?
Yeah.
Were you disappointed that Phoenix could only win 18 games so far this year and
okay, that's one thing everybody knows
points. They're brutal. Exactly.
Okay, well, when I was awful in Carolina and we were playing Detroit and they were up 7-0 and Scotty Bowman, if he just left the bench and let Steve Yzerman, I'd be like, you're a joke.
You wouldn't think your team was the joke. You would think the opposing coach.
So you think
coach.
Just because a team is garbage, the coach on the other team can just say, you guys do this. This is such a joke. I can't even coach because they're so bad and we're so good, so you guys do it.
Yeah.
I think that's embarrassing the sport, everything about it. Sportsmanship, class, everything. It's a joke.
See, I think as professionals, you have to realize that this can happen. The feelings of the opponent is not my concern. Their bank accounts allow me to walk away and be like, I don't care about your concerns. This was amateur sports, it would be a different story. They're pro athletes, they're grown men. This is the way it goes. But I also think when you're dealing with a scenario like Golden State, where they are so above and beyond everyone else,
see,
you have to do things
differently. This is so typical of the radio host, and I know you played sports, you played in the OHL, yeah. But you didn't play in the big leagues. And if you were okay. On the bench for the for Phoenix.
What if you were on the bench for Golden State? Would you have a greater appreciation for Steve Kerr?
Well, if I was a leader on the team, I would say to Steve Kerr, do you really want to do this right now? The optics of this are garbage.
You would concern yourself with the optics.
Well, I would just say this. We're killing them on the scoreboard. Do we need to embarrass this team any more than we already have?
So you would say, I'm not partaking in this. Would you say I'm not partaking in it? You're the pro athlete. I'm asking you. Would you, if Steve Kerr was...
I would say this really does not need to happen. Like, just play the kids... Play the subs, and away you go.
So are you surprised that no one stepped up and did that?
I am surprised. But it's the way that sporting and sports is right now compared to when I played, it's a lot different. So to think that these guys would welcome that opportunity and want to look like asses on the bench, it doesn't shock me. Because it's different. It's a different world.
Yeah, it's very different. And Golden State has made it very different with the way that they win, the way that they play, the way that they perform.
So you think that that was funny? What did you think that was?
Well, I thought it was different. I thought it was interesting. It was. I've never seen that before. This is like Jackie Moon in semi-pro. They've got Draymond Green and Andre Iguodala are running the huddles during timeouts and during commercial breaks. And
that's a joke.
I think Golden State is so much better than everyone else. That
okay, then it's like
they're trying
really
to do things differently.
Teams,
and Steve Kerr, I don't think, has a responsibility to care about what Phoenix thinks about him or what hot take artists think about him. I think he's concerned with trying to get his team engaged. And I think he tried something different. Whether or not it works is a different conversation, but I credit him for trying it.
I credit him for trying it. Yeah, that's the sports host that just loves greasy garbage to talk about and find it interesting.
At 92 Crow tweeting in saying, having class is important. Steve Kerr showed none of it. Come on now. All right. Showing class.
Yeah. You're just so grossed out that the Suns are that garbage. You think they should be embarrassed by that?
Yeah, I think they should be embarrassed by that. I think they're so bad, and they got smoked so badly that I don't think it's the responsibility of the winning team to concern themselves with the feelings of every. What are they supposed to do? Steph Curry's supposed to get over the half court and just roll the ball to Phoenix? Sorry, not going to shoot, because that's the same kind of mentality. Up big late in the game, don't put your starters on the court. Don't put your first power play unit out there. Don't try to embarrass the other team.
It's spoken like a hot take machine like yourself with no professional sporting background. Let's go to commercial.
No, you like the participation badge for everybody.
The participation badge?
Participation badge for everybody. That's the part of the crowd you're a part of.
You might
Everyone has to come out a winner.
You might need a trip to Lake Placid.
Pal. Everyone gets orange slices at half.
Yeah.
That's what you are.
Yeah.
Mr. Orange Slice.
You're up by 40.
Everyone gets freezies after the game. Pick your color. Yeah. Everyone wins.
Yeah, because that's what I'm all about.
I guess. Yeah. Have to concern yourself with the Phoenix Suns and your boy Jay Triano.
We have to wrap here.
At Heed 999. O-Dog's absolutely right.
Thank you. Anyone with any class, unlike yourself.
It's about acting like a professional. They should be.
I found that very interesting. The players coach the game.
Ooh, Courtney, I like this one. O-Dog can usually say that you're throwing out host takes or whatever, but it seems like he's just throwing out former player takes.
Yeah.
I'll like
What's
and retweet
name?
That one.
That's because I am one, Courtney.
Just relax over there. All right, Kevin Pelton will join us. ESPN Insider. We'll get his take on this, if he felt like that was necessary last night from Steve Kerr.
That's a good segment. What's your take? We'll get different takes and say, is this a former player take or a hot take?
Send us your tweets, texts, emails. Overdrive continues on the TSN Go app. Someone texting in, once again, this is why Hayes is proving he is not a man with any principles. Apparently I'm not principled enough because I'm cool with Steve Kerr allowing his team to coach themselves in a fourth quarter blowout last night against the Suns.
Because you've never been a pro athlete and know what it's like to be on the other side. You think it's funny and amusing as a sports host.
Yeah, but aren't the Warriors pro athletes? Like, that's the point of that take that doesn't...
Okay,
well,
the players are at fault, too, to say, Coach, this is embarrassing. We're not doing this. But this is the day and age where this type of thing would be funny. So do it.
Brad texting in, old Tommy Boy and Bill Belichick down in New England would do the exact same thing. Show no weakness, run them into the ground. Good boy, Brad.
Mulls, what are your thoughts on this? You don't care, do you?
Yeah, it doesn't really matter. The glue guy's tweeting in, Steve Kerr deserves the Jeb Bush Low Energy Award today. Keon tweeting in, I'm with you, Hayes. They're adults. Don't like it. Do something about it. Tyler tweeting in saying maybe the Suns should force Kerr to actually coach by actually competing in the fourth quarter. People are torn on this, man. It's a great topic. You're wrong, Hayes. No one likes a classless jerk. Like you. That's uncalled for.
That's the best one.
Hazy B, this might be your worst take since the David Copperfield take in Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
And then this one guy kind of takes a run at both of us. Liam
you
tweeting in.
You think Copperfield pulls?
Yeah, I know he does. Have you seen his rotation?
Oh, yeah.
He was married to Claudia Schiffer, dude. Copperfield is the Jeter of magicians. Liam emailing in saying, O-Dog only thinks that way because he played for losing teams, but Brian's a jackass for thinking that that was anything but classless. So that's a shot at you and your career and a shot at my take. I'd say we're
you
even.
You can't say both there, pal. Come in hot with one or the other.
Why do you have to take a run at both of us? Pick one or the other. All right, so Kevin Pelton's going to join us from ESPN. We'll get his take on this. Classless or cool last night by Steve Kerr? That answer in 2 minutes. trade deadline, less than 2 weeks away. Leafs coming off a big win last night. They've won 8 of 9. Columbus in town tomorrow night. Raptors back in action tonight. Miami's in town. First time since Ibaka and James Johnson got into it. Dragic and DeRozan got fined for what they did towards the end of the game. I'm not expecting craziness tonight, but you never know.
Well, they always say fighting in hockey, you might want to do your research. I don't think Ibaka wants to go back and try that again. Do you know why?
James Johnson will...
He's a black belt.
Yeah, cause serious damage.
He is one class away from being a ninja and will kick your ass.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right, here's Kevin Pelton, ESPN NBA insider. What's happening, Kevin?
Nothing much. I don't want any part of James Johnson either. I'm staying away.
Yeah, he terrifies all of us, man. He can do some serious damage, and it really felt like after Ibaka threw that one punch, he realized.
You hear what he, if you can read lips, he goes, next time, I'm ready. I'll be ready next time. I was like, oh, boy.
No, thank
there
you.
There is no next time.
No, thank you. We've been talking about this Steve Kerr situation. Go ahead. Put it on the line for Kevin.
We want to decide, is it classless or is it kind of interesting for Steve Kerr to let his players coach the team when they're dummying the opposition? What are your thoughts on it?
I mean, I think it's interesting. Obviously, they didn't know that they were going to blow out the Suns when they started this whole experiment. And who knows, maybe if they wouldn't have if they didn't, because the whole reason Steve Kerr undertook this, I'm sure, is because of the fact that at times the Warriors have been, you know, not locked in defensively over the last month here. They haven't been the kind of Golden State defense we've seen. And, you know, I think this was a way to get them to maybe place more value in a regular season game against a team with a losing record than they would have otherwise. And then it kind of turned into the route, and yeah, I don't know that that was necessarily the intention.
How do you feel about Steve Kerr's legacy as a head coach, considering what he walked into? He walked into a team that was on the verge of becoming one of the great dynasties in pro sports history. How do we evaluate the greatness of Steve Kerr as a coach?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting we say this, but at the time, you know, nobody was certain what the Warriors were going to be when Kerr took over. I think I may have written this, at least tweeted it. Like, I thought it was maybe making a mistake because the expectations were so high for that team, and there were so many other quality teams in the Western Conference. So it was far from a foregone conclusion that they were going to become, you know, the kind of dynasty that they have become. I mean, obviously, the talent plays a huge part in that, and Kerr would be the first one to say it. He couldn't do it without the singular talents of, you know, Stephen Curry and Klay Thompson and Draymond Green and more recently Kevin Durant. But, you know, he also helped unlock those by being willing to experiment with playing Draymond Green at center. You know, the suggestion from his young assistant coach Nick Uren during the 2015 finals to go to that death lineup as a starting five. A lot of coaches might have resisted that, and Kerr's willingness to do it, I think, you know, it has been a factor in this team getting to the level it's reached.
With Kevin Pelton, ESPN NBA insider. Raptors in action tonight. Cleveland's down in Oklahoma City. And the Cavs stole the trade deadline, and then they roll into Boston on Sunday, and they spank the Celtics, and everyone's going crazy. Now all of a sudden they're
team to beat.
The best team in the East, and maybe they could beat Golden State. Now they got the inside track on LeBron sticking around. I was expecting that. I knew those takes were coming. Where do you stand on this in terms of how different the Cavs are and how that affects teams like the Raptors in Boston come playoff time?
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. You know, I think that's one of the big takeaways here is you don't want to read too much into that one game and kind of the catharsis of getting some of those guys, Isaiah Thomas and Jay Crowder, out of the locker room and changing the chemistry, kind of a breath of fresh air. It certainly shouldn't be exciting for the Raptors because of the fact that, you know, the Cavaliers were limping along so aimlessly before they made these trades. And, you know, I think it was Kobe Altman's comments about how he didn't want to be involved in just kind of watching that happen and he didn't see it changing. So, you know, that if somehow there was a world where the Cavs didn't do anything, that would be better for the Raptors. But, you know, at the same time, the Cavs have to show that they can play at the level the Raptors have throughout this season over an extended stretch because, you know, we haven't seen them from them at all this year. And obviously we have many times in the past, but those were different teams with Kyrie Irving at point guard. And I don't think this team has as much top-end talent as those teams did. They still got LeBron, and that's a really great starting place. But we'll see how they click over the last 2 months.
How difficult is it for you to get a read on what this regular season means from DeMar DeRozan in particular, but also Kyle Lowry, and how it's going to apply to their playoff performance, because these guys have not been very good playoff performers in the past.
Well, I think the number one thing here is that Kyle Lowry's minutes being down the way they are, and you know the fact that none of the Raptors starters are having to play in the fourth quarter anymore, that's a wonderful benefit. I think that makes him, you know, a lot fresher going into the playoffs. If he's not battling the kind of injuries that we've seen the last couple of years that have affected him, that's a good starting point. You know, DeRozan, I think stylistically the changes we've seen in his game, more playmaking, obviously the improvement from three-point range, even improvement at the defensive end of the court, all of that should translate very well, because those are the things that became issues for him in the playoffs that hadn't been in the regular season.
Really appreciate you taking time for us. We'll do it again down the road. Thank you, Kevin.
All right, thanks for having me.
There's Kevin Pelton from ESPN. And that's yet to be determined who the Raptors are going to play in the first round, let alone second and third round if they get there, and how Kyle and DeMar are going to respond to the reduced minutes this year. How the bench mob will factor into playoff success.
Who cares who you get when you get them for the Raps? Just if you want to make a statement and prove that you are what you think you are, just go out and do it and win. DeMar and Kyle, go play great. Be the best players. Like, don't sit and wait. Oh, we don't want to play them first. Just get it over with.
I'm with you, but I'll take home court.
Well,
every day of the week.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. You can get that top spot and avoid Boston or Cleveland until the conference final. You obviously have to make that a priority, and they obviously are going to do that. But I'm with you. At some point, you got to go through one of those two teams. That's who you're meeting. It's not like Washington's going to get to the end, or Miami's going to get to the end, or Detroit or something like that, or Philly. We know it's going to be one of three teams representing the East in the NBA Finals. And playing Steve Kerr and the Golden State Warriors.
And he will get dummied.
By the Warriors?
Yeah.
Yep. Probably. All right, Pierre LeBrun, our hockey insider in studio just after 5 p.m. Bobby Mack coming up in the 6 p.m. hour. Leafs coming off a big win last night. How about Chicago just getting destroyed in Arizona?
Wasn't that the King Daddy Topper? The
end of the dynasty. Like, that was kind of it. Like, we knew it was trending that way, but you get embarrassed in Arizona. And now they're like 10 points out of the playoffs. Change is on the horizon, I would think.
What that is, what are you going to do?
Well, I think Quinville might be the guy. I'm not saying that's the right move, but we'll discuss it more throughout the afternoon. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050. People wondering where Noodles is today. He's calling another game. I think he's in Pittsburgh, but
he probably is with Brian Mudrick.
Is Muddy calling the game for Ottawa tonight?
He is very good at NHL games. I listened to his first one. Very good.
Dennis Bayak calling the game last night on TSN 4.
Legend.
Great to hear Dennis. I'm assuming he'll be calling more games because Gord and CC are both over in South Korea.
There's a lot of people over in South Korea.
Or even down in the States. Like NBC has pulled in a lot of people. Like Tessa's down there. I think Mike Johnson's down there. Your boy Tony Ambrosio is down there.
What a savage.
He is a savage, Tony. Such a good guy. We'll get more into the Olympics a little bit later on. See, Simmons wrote a piece in The Sun that everyone is freaking out about his take on mixed doubles curling. He can spark a conversation.
About fake outrage? Really?
Steve's outrage or the outrage of the piece?
The peeps. Like, really? Most people read that article, look over it, and just say, not for me. But now, everyone just hates Steve.
Mm-hmm. Poor Steve. Not the first time he's been under attack. Won't be the last time he's under attack. But I don't, you know, the premise was that it's a made-up event. It's for TV. And he didn't think it necessarily felt right at the Olympics. But they do this all the time. Like, I was reading about a piece this morning, or I was reading a story this morning. Woman by the name of Felicia George, who's a summer Olympian, she's going to be a part of a two-woman bobsled team. Her and Kaylee Humphreys, one of the great Canadian Olympians of all time. She just started bobsledding 6 months ago, and she's over there on Humphreys' team as the brakeman on the team. I remember Jesse Lumsden four years ago? He played football his whole life, like 6 months before the Olympics. He's like, yeah, I could probably bobsled. So where's the outrage on that? That a guy who's never done it before or a woman who's never performed before 6 months out is like, yeah, I think I can try it. You know, and all of a sudden you're at the Olympics.
I might end up dead, but I might try the skeleton. All you got to do is fling your arms and then lie on that thing and point your toes.
Skeleton, luge, and ski jumping are the three most terrifying and dangerous sports in the world. Ski jumping, I don't even know how you start to do that. Like, how do you train for that?
Yeah, like the first time going up, how do you, like, I would say put 57 mattresses down there.
Minimum, and wrap me in three. Like, how do you possibly learn to ski jump?
I don't know, dude.
They are flying, and they are going, they're literally flying. But they're going down the ski hill so fast, and they launch. What do they go, 50 feet, 60, 70 feet?
It's insane, dude.
I saw a luge blow out earlier this morning that was terrifying, too. We'll discuss that.
We'll get into the Olympics in full detail.
Pierre LeBrun in studio in the 5 p.m. hour. Bobby Mack later this afternoon. Overdrive continues on the TSN Go app.